We're talking with Ken Johnson, former NASA official, about photos he has seen of anomalies on the moon and elsewhere. And we're opening up the phone lines with your questions right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Ken Johnson, before we open up the phone lines, I'm curious whether you've had any contact with Russian folks, cosmonauts, or people involved in their space program since you've sort of come out of the closet about what they know of what's on the moon or Mars or elsewhere.
We must have a mind lock going here, because during the break I was making some notes on things that I wanted to bring up. As a matter of fact, there's one guy that stands out. In this kind of goes back to what I was talking about, my whole life's experiences winding up in the right places at the right time, and almost to the point where I think somebody or some people have been involved with seeing that I certain doors were open that I wound up there. And an example would be back in 1998, I wound up becoming a friend with a gentleman by the name of Vance Davis. And if you know the Gulf Breeze story, Vance Davis, or the Gulf Breeze Five, he was the one of the military guys that they went AWOL for a while and showed up over in Gulf Breeze and were observers of the saucers going on there. And of course, you picked Jefferson Airplane and Have You Seen My Saucer? Vance actually came and lived with me here in Albuquerque for several months back in '99. So, there had direct contact with someone who's well known as having seen the saucers. So, I don't know if that answers. Oh, and then the other one, you mentioned Russia. As a Mason, I was down checking out the lodge, and there was this gentleman going around looking at the posters on the outside, trying to figure out how to get in. And the guy introduced himself to me, and it was a very strange, hard to understand accent. His name was Boris Yaroslavtsev. And Boris and I have become extremely good friends over the past decade, almost 2 decades now. And he was in Russia as like a cryptologist. He would decipher the Europeans' radio communications on the Russian side, and it winds up that Vance Davis, while he was there on the other side of in Germany, the other side of the wall, and he was intercepting Russian communique and translate, and the two of them got to meet when Vance and I were all together, and they actually knew each other's call signs. Now, how in the world do I wind up knowing two people that were that involved in tracking, seeing what's going on with the space program and military? That's just mind-boggling to me.
Synchronicity, I guess, but did you get any insight into what the Russians may have seen or what their opinions were of what might be up there?
Well, Boris, he's still very active there in the Seattle area, and every time the Russians come over to do a special aviation or show thing, he's there doing translations for them. And he and I talked quite a few times about Star City and the things that were going on. He wasn't in a position to be knowledgeable of what the Russian space program was going on. His was more interested in military movements of different countries on the European side, as well as on the Russian side. But I've often wondered if he was a sleeper, and if he's out listening to this tonight, let him know that I wondered if he was a sleeper here, and he's been here all these years. And now that the old Russian regime has kind of collapsed, maybe he's out of a job and he's going to continue as being a draftsman here. That's what his forte has been, as a draftsman.
One other quick question before going to the phones. We brought back a lot of moon rocks and dust and things of that sort. I would think that if there really are these artifacts up there and wheels and pieces of equipment left by whomever, somebody would have brought some of them back. Ever get an indication that we brought something back that would be truly anomalous?
Really interesting, because on Apollo 11, when it first returned, all of the samples were packed in on board the spacecraft. No, I take that back. Once we landed, and the aircraft carrier, they picked up the spacecraft and brought it, the crew members packed all of the lunar samples into these stainless steel shipping suitcases, if you will, and they were supposed to not even be touched by anyone. As soon as they landed at Ellington Air Force Base, NASA's director and all of them ran out for a photo ops, and they picked up, and they're holding the boxes of the moon samples. And it's like, did they know ahead of time that there certainly was nothing to worry about? Could be. And now, with could they have picked up other things? I've gone through the scenarios with several technically knowledgeable people of aircraft and time and distance than myself. And I was explaining to them how when we landed in the ocean, we were picked up. The film, the samples, all of those were taken from the spacecraft, put on board an aircraft, launched from the aircraft carriers, flown to Hawaii, offloaded from Hawaii, and then transported and shipped to the United States and another stop, and then over to Ellington Air Force Base. And there were numerous points along that line where it had been very simple to have removed, let's call it Data's head, the robotic head that was found on Apollo 17. There, if you follow the timelines and where the equipment was, even though it's classified, there were several places where it certainly could have been offloaded, those things. And then when they brought them into the Lunar Receiving Laboratory, into the processing chambers that we had, which incidentally my brother actually designed the lunar sample processing portion of the lab, when they opened the boxes in there, those items were not there. So you didn't have to worry about someone opening up a box and finding a wrench or finding a piece of electronic hardware or a robotic head, something like that, because they would have been removed before they got there.
So maybe.
Maybe. Well, it's highly probable. The opportunity was there. The desire was there. And in their mind, the need to do that was there. So, you know, you've got some of the basic requirements of, well, it could have happened, yes.
East of the Rockies, Steve in South Dakota. Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Hi, George and Ken. This is Steve from South Dakota. Ken, my friend.
Hey, yes, Steve. Good to hear from you.
Yes, good to hear you, too. Ken and you know, Richard and I have worked together for years. And that crater was Tsiolkovsky, by the way. Ken, I have a question for you.
All right.
Do you think, as I do, that it's possible that what we've seen as far as the unnatural geometry and artifacts on the moon could conceivably be our own stuff? The reason I ask that is because our civilization has, as Graham Hancock has often said, a serious case of amnesia. We've forgotten our past and our roots. And what we see on the moon as far as artifacts are signatures of a past scientific epoch of Earth, that we made these things. What do you think about that?
Well, I think if you take the tsunami through, I'm going to say the Philippines, I may be wrong there, but the people that survived that, it was such a horrific thing, they're blocking that out of their memory because it was so horrible to remember. And there's evidence in some of the ancient writings on our planet, of histories, that we do suffer from amnesia, from something like that. And if we were to go through a cataclysmic type pole shift, I can imagine if you wiped out 90% of the world's population, we wouldn't want to think in terms of what it was. And there's evidence that we are. Some of the religions and things talk about are in our fifth cycle of advancement.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
It is just my own personal feeling that some of it could definitely have been us trying to reach a level of acceptance in the sentient being portion of the galaxies, or it could be both us and them.
Well, do you remember that trip that you and I made to Houston in the year 2000 for that special for BBC?
Right.
And they quoted my data and me as saying that the artifacts found that I had found were alien ruins. And somehow that just didn't sit well with me when they said alien, the word alien. Because immediately I think of E.T., and that's not necessarily true. I think personally, and I'll leave it for some more callers here, but I personally think it's our stuff. And I think we need to go back and, you know, verify this. And I think the Apollo missions were quit way too soon, and I think they were quit because of the stuff that's up there.
Thank you, Steve, for the call.
No, if it were us, if I get in there, George, then there are the watchers, those of us that survived these cataclysmic events, that are trying to keep us from going the same way that they did and have suffering through something like that. So we've got the E.T., I want to say the E.T. are we. So Steve could be right. We just have to wait and find out, I guess.
But Ken, as you were saying earlier, you felt that these operations on the moon were current, that weren't just ancient, that they were ongoing.
But that some of them are, absolutely. And because you've got evidence of both. You've got collapsed domes, you've got collapsed arcologies, and that you can see just the superstructure on. And yet you can see in some of the craters, such as I did on the Apollo 14 film strips, of an active base of some sort. Now, some people have told me that, well, could that be one of our black ops base? Well, I don't know why we'd do it on the back side of the moon. I think we'd want to have it on the front side. But, you know, there's so much out there to be found out. And the only way to do it is we need to go back, and we need to have a government that's a little more forthcoming, because most of the other major powers in the world are becoming very open towards making it to the public, their UFO records and other information like that. It's just that we're still running behind Brookings and saying, oh, we can't handle it. You know, if you want to know the truth, but you can't handle it.
Well, in that same vein, do you believe that we have some sort of a secret space program, that there are operations and missions that are being carried out, astronaut corps, that the public doesn't know about?
I certainly do, and that's my own personal opinion, but it's come from talking with some people that said that they are in position that they would have, that they know. We definitely do have And there's also the others I've talked with that says that they've actually met E.T. It's kind of an open book there. I have not personally seen or spoken with any E.T.s. I have seen in my flying experience crafts that could outdo anything we had, and that would have to be in my book be a UFO, unidentified flying object. So as well as under the water, I dealt with some people who were with the nuclear subs, and they talk about UFOs, unidentified submerged objects. So there are projects and things going on. We know for sure how aircraft and the B-2 bomber, the batwing-shaped craft, I'm thoroughly convinced that it is because it was released so fast to the public, because we were seeing craft like that, some of the UFO sightings, and the feeling is that they released the public one, which is it flies within our atmosphere and it's cloaked, and you know, its radar can't pick it up along that line. But the actual one would be a gravity drive incapable of going to Mars. So there's a whole school of thought on black ops operations, and I have a tendency to believe that from just the information that I have available.
Okay. West of the Rockies, Jeff in Mendocino. Good morning, Jeff.
Hi, George. Great show tonight. Really enjoying your guest. And a couple points I want to touch on that lead to my question. As far as conspiracy theories, I tell people just because there's a conspiracy theory doesn't mean there isn't a conspiracy. And whether that conspiracy is by people being in on it or by incompetence, I think that all those play into it, and neither of those are mutually exclusive with each other. Now, I was born a month after Sputnik. My dad actually worked on that robotic arm that was returned by Gene Cernan and that crew that went up on Apollo 17. It was removed from one of the surveyors, which my dad actually flew one of those particular missions for a few minutes from JPL. And my grandmother was a photo developer at China Lake Naval Weapons Center, which is right across the county line, basically, from you in Inyo County. And I once asked her, what was the most unique or strangest picture you ever saw or developed shortly before she passed in 93? And the look she gave me, you guys, was like the newspaper would have probably had a headline, something along the lines of grandmother kills grandson in national security mishap. But what I would like to ask you is, since she didn't answer it, she stayed true to her vow, what was the strangest picture you ever saw? And maybe you could elaborate on something along those lines. Really great show. And by the way, thank you for what you're doing. It's really difficult to stand up and expose the truth. I've been through some of that myself. So kudos to you, and I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Jeff.
Once you get out on that limb, you might as well stay out there, because the fall is too far to go. And so I just keep on telling the truth and telling what I know, and sticking with that. Let me see if I got your question right. You're saying, what is it that I have seen?
Yeah, the most dramatic.
Dramatic. Of course, the most dramatic was the base on the backside of the moon that I saw from Apollo 14 film that I actually showed. And the other ones, of course, are the pictures coming back from Mars, and the fact of what the European Space Agency is scrambling to try to do, as well as the Chinese. The pictures that I've seen from Mars are just phenomenal at showing what is there that we need to go and find out more. So it's all fascinating to me. Having been part of it up to this point, I keep wanting to keep my finger in the pie, and hoping that some people out there will contact me and I'll get a little more information here and there. And if they do, I'll share it.
First-time caller Dennis in New York.
Good morning, George. Thank you for those musical interludes. They brought back some very nice memories. Mr. Johnson, the reason I'm calling is that my son's in the military, and he's recently come back from three tours in Iraq, and him and his family now are Baptist. They were raised Roman Catholic. And my question to you is, is there any conflict between your Baptist training and your scientific employment? And I'll listen to your answer off the air.
Thanks,
Merry Christmas.
Okay,
you too.
Merry Christmas, Dennis. Well, thank you very much. No, I don't. And I guess I can go to the verse that says, study to know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. There is so much dogma from all the different religions and things out there that once you study them, I reached the point, and that's being a Reformed Baptist minister, that to the point where I hate all of man's religions, because they have crippled and kept mankind from being able to advance and controlling our thoughts. But I have a total strong belief in the existence of supreme being, and I'm not sure if that answers his question now. George, where else do you want me to go with that?
Well, I in my own UFO studies, I've talked to a lot of different religious leaders, different faiths, and the idea that you mentioned from the Brookings Institute report about society disintegrating in the face of incontrovertible evidence about some superior intelligence. I've never found any religious order or discipline that had any real problem with confronting this. Most of them, they approach it as it's the greater glory of God, that there are other people out there, other civilizations. There might be some problems in the beginning in accepting it, but not in the big picture.
That is the thinking now. If you go back to what James Olberg and his thesis was on mass media indoctrination, we talked about the effect it would have upon religion. And the key things Brookings pointed out, that it would be devastating to not only the science community, but second, the most devastating would be to religions.
So yeah, I don't believe it. I just don't believe it.
Well, we've gone through a learning process in the past 40 years to a point where now religions are coming and say, oh, yes, it is to the glory of God. And yes, if God created man on earth, everything, there was no reason to say that he created someplace else, too.
Absolutely. Ken Johnson, a lot more people on the phones with questions for you. We'll get to as many as we can after this on Coast to Coast AM. Ken Johnson is my guest, talking about his experiences within NASA, strange photographs that he saw during his time in their photographic program. The phone lines are full. We're getting to as many of your calls as we can right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Ken Johnson, one quick question before we go back to the phones. You look at the glory days of NASA, the amazing things they accomplished in such a short amount of time, going to the moon in, just under 10 years. Amazing and something we can be proud of. You look at NASA today, and it seems like it's a jobs program, that they start a program and cancel it. They start another one and cancel it just to keep things going, and it doesn't seem to be that there is much of a vision there. Do you have thoughts in that regard?
Yes, I do. Once we landed on the moon, I mentioned, you know, Grumman laid off some 36,000. There were PhD scientists selling newspaper around in Houston just trying to find a job. And those that were the highly qualified ones that helped and got us to the moon, we got burned so bad, we got out of the space industry by and large once we got a career going in another field. And those that were had hit the Peter Principle, they hung on. And I'm not saying that all of them that hung on were the incompetent ones, but in reality, you find that those that were able to stick around for 30 years and what have you, they did that by not rocking the boat. And whenever, like when Steve Troy mentioned about the BBC, when we went down to Houston for that, we met some of the young engineers out at NASA at the time, and they introduced me. And this young engineer, he says, "Oh my God," he says, "you're an icon. What you guys did back in those days is just unbelievable." And here he was, a NASA employee, working there at the time. And like you say, they start a program, and the next administration comes in and cancel it. And it's kind of like a game playing that we're not in on what the objective of the whole game is. That's my point on it.
Yeah, just they drag it out, cancel this, cancel that, just to keep the jobs going for very limited sort of objectives.
Right.
Back to the phones. Tom in Seattle on the wild card line. Hi, Tom.
Hi. At the time, I was working as a wind tunnel model maker for a NASA contractor out of Langley. And we were up behind a building one time having lunch, and our NASA contract officer came out and sat down with us. And I says, "Why so glum?" And he says, "Well, they've canceled the moon program." And I said, "Gee, that's a lot of lost budget." And he says, "Yeah." I says, "Why do you suppose they did that?" And he said that there was a rumor going around NASA that the lunar orbiter got on the backside of the moon in the radio shadow and saw the lights of this huge base come on, and heard a voice in plain English on the radio say, "Explore no farther." And that's why they canceled the program, according to him. And at the time, I thought that was BS. But since then, I've learned different. And my question to you is that, do you have any pictures of this base that you keep talking about on the backside of the moon? And also, Ingo Swann, a remote viewer, says he's been there and got thrown out. And like that. So I'd like to know what your take is on that particular version of that episode.
Well, Tom, I don't have any pictures because, like I say, those were airbrushed out and taken out of my care of the base inside Tsiolkovsky. I understand you right. You said that this person himself was privy to that, or again, is it secondhand that he heard that some other people were that they heard the noise? I mentioned earlier, though, that several of the people rank and file had been talking about that they had heard a transmission that said that they were told not to return. So
this was a machine shop supervisor out of NASA Langley.
I see, and he said he was there, and he had heard the transmission, the talk.
Well, he didn't say he heard any transmissions. He just said that there was a rumor going around NASA. So it's probably fourth hand.
I heard the same rumor. So, you know, a lot of these theories, things have some base of truth in them. So it all kind of fits together.
Well, I can believe that, and it's going to sound fantastic for me to say this to you, but starting in 1992 and ending 2 years ago, I've had 48 alien contacts at my shop. It seems these alien flight crew are like Air Force cadets on shore leave, coming to visit me at my house to look at my home-built airplane activities and then leaving. And they quit 2 years ago when I started talking about it on coast. Apparently, they don't care much for me talking about it. But I don't expect you to believe that, but you gotta see it to know it.
That's for sure. That's for sure. I appreciate that, Tom. Thanks.
Tom, you were in Langley, you said, with a NASA subcontractor. Is the proximity of Langley to some other interesting facilities there, is that a coincidence?
No, it was the wind tunnel complex there that we were dealing in. And at the time, we were dealing with the selection process for the F-16, F-17 models. And like that. And NASA was so happy with us that we were just overloaded with work for about 3 years.
And you said you had 48 contacts or something at your shop, meaning some sort of an intrusion?
At my home. Not intrusions, visitors. See, I build large-scale radio control model airplanes, 9-10-footers. And these guys are airplane crazy. They don't know what a model airplane is. And they say, why do you make these things? I say, let it out my creativity. And it makes me happy. And they ask me all kinds of questions about my models. They say this, like a control surface on a MiG-29 is the same as a Albatross D-3 from World War One. They say, this is hard, this is soft. Why? And I say, this is a scale replica of the airplane. And they and they go away.
Having a garage like that, it'll give you some idea how it importance and why it might be of interest. I just recently found out that the Predator craft that was didn't get shot down, looks like it got landed over in Iraq, originally was the first Predators were put together by a former Israeli scientist that came over here, and he was building it in his own backyard, and then our military got hold of what he's doing, and that's where the whole Predator remote control
I saw some from
his garage, just like your garage. It came from his garage.
Well, I saw some pictures in the latest issue of one of the aviation magazines of this drone, and it's got some really advanced aerodynamics into it. And
absolutely,
the guy really's got his act together if what you say is true.
Tom, one other question. These people who are talking to you, I mean, physically, they're a physical presence in there, or you're just hearing it in your head, or how do
they come in groups of four, and I've seen them a few times, but they decided that for some security reason that I shouldn't be able to see them, but I'll find myself explaining what I'm doing and why and how I'm doing it. And then they'll ask me, how does this work? How does that work? And I'll find myself giving out mental pictures of how the electronic circuitry in my radio works. And they'll say, oh, wow. And then they'll go away. And then they ask me things like, why don't you build something modern instead of this 1910 stuff? And I said, it's much more challenging to build something that old and make it work than it is to make something new. And they'll say, oh, and they'll go away.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it, Tom. Thanks. Dan in Iowa on the wild card line. Hi, Dan.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The question is, about an hour ago, you mentioned that there was a secure uplink from the moon to Houston in which the astronauts said they are on the crater and watching us now. And my jaw dropped, and we kind of just blew over that like it was an everyday occurrence. And you said that we were told not to return. In your opinion, if you care to speculate, what do you think they said to us, and what do you think that they said to us that would keep us firmly planted on the ground and never going any farther than low Earth orbit?
Well, you're asking my personal opinion. By warning us off, with the sternness of the from the people I talked to that said they heard this, it was very forceful. It's like your parent telling you, don't go out into the street. You know, you're not old enough to know where to look for traffic. Well, we're being told, don't come back to the moon. You're not ready yet. So, in essence, they are waiting till we as a species have matured in our space traveling capabilities before we can be allowed to return to the moon. And so I think we're at that point. And with our black ops and everything that's been going on, I'd say we definitely have hit that level and gone beyond that.
But the idea that it's an implied threat?
Yes. In my opinion, the way I heard it, all it was an implied threat that don't come back. You know, so we canceled the last three missions, all paid for, by the way, by us. And the equipment and materials all there was ready to go. Got scrubbed.
Thanks, Dan. Sydney in New Mexico. How you doing?
Hi, I'm doing fine. I have several questions. During the last 4 years, had been caring for a sick veteran, apparently a very angry veteran, was not aware of how ill he really was, and had him in my home after I rescued him from drunk driving and hepatitis C. He was here. I was caring for him. I have my minister's certificate. And after he left, I was here for, it's been about a year now. I woke up and have started looking through things in my home and came across an atlas and some other assorted items that seem to have something to do with this NASA program. His father worked in Los Alamos at some point, was an electrical engineer, had a lot to do with the testing set up years ago during when the atom bomb was tested here before Japan. I met his father, very nice man. I met his uncle, very nice people, very blessed to have met them. Ended up with some things in my home from his home. He was very ill, and I brought him here. He was suffering frostbite.
What's the stuff? What did you have?
I have an atlas with some writing in it. I found he was trained. He went to college down in Roswell to learn a new trade after he got out of the military. Left his flight manuals here. He worked for a fire sprinkler safety company and used a machine shop off and on. He would machine the piping, the plumbing for these fire safety sprinkler systems for homes and large-scale businesses.
Do you still have that material?
Yes, I do.
I need
to be very selective about who I choose to get this material.
I'm not sure
who to contact.
If she's still here in New Mexico, and of course I live close to Albuquerque, if you want offline, you could give her my number and I can contact her, and then we can see if we can get this material available to you and into the right hands that we need to make it public.
I would absolutely prefer that. I've been sitting here wrestling with this, and I am quite sure this is instrumental in many possible sabotage issues all over the United States, not just here.
I tell you what, Sydney, going to ask Gina, our gal Gina, to get your contact information.
All right.
And I'll provide it to Ken, and we'll, as long as Ken promises to keep us in the loop in some regard, we'll work this out, okay?
God bless you, and Merry Christmas to you and the space program and to Coast to Coast, and I am a huge fan. I've had stage fright for many years, and this is the first thing that has been very pertinent to the information that I'm holding.
Okay, well, thank we'll you, work Sydney. This out. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate
You're
it.
You're welcome.
It's people like Sydney that needs to come forward and bring this information forward. That's the only way we're going to get it out to the public, is get it with those of us who are pushing the envelope, trying to get the truth out there.
Well, we'll see where that one leads. Thanks for the call. Dave in Apple Valley, California. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, hey, George. How are you doing?
Okay.
Yeah, happy Easter to you guys.
Easter.
Yeah, it's coming up next. That's the next big one. But listen, you know that the Vatican, you know, they have these observatories. They got telescopes. Why in the hell does the Vatican have telescopes? Look, they're looking for God, looking for Jesus. He's not coming back, okay? After what they did to him, he's not coming back here. So the only thing that I think that they're looking for is some new astrotheological sign that they can create for the new, you know, the new and, you know, mythological God that they've, you know, been pushing on everybody for 2,000 years and brainwashing the entire world, you know, with their, you know, with their putrid ideology that's causing nothing but suffering and pain and wars. But other than that, I have a question for you, and I want to ask you, you know, I had a telescope. I lost it in a fire. But anyway, I had a pretty big telescope, not one of those, like, you know, kill away or anything, you know, but I used to point it at the moon. I never saw anything. I know that when you point a telescope at the moon, you have to look through the atmosphere. It's like looking at the, you know, out of space through the bottom of a swimming pool, you know. And So I look at the moon. I haven't seen nothing. I've seen stuff flying in front, maybe like, you know, a little condensation or whatever, or birds or whatever. And I kind of go, oh, what's that, you know? But I've never seen anything. And I wondered, why has NASA ever pointed, you know, they have the Hubble Space Telescope that has found galaxies, you know, 15 billion light years away. Not 15 billion miles, but 15 billion light years away. That is a number it's impossible to even fathom, okay? So why don't they point the NASA telescope, the Hubble, at the moon so we can all see? I mean, that we, you know, we'd be able to, you know, maybe they'll find some discotheque or something. Somebody's dancing up there. So, you know, I would like to know if that's a possibility.
Okay. Actually, thanks, Dave.
Dave, you missed it a little bit earlier because I did go into that. We did get NASA to turn the Hubble to the moon, and we've been getting some fantastic pictures back. There's a fantastic picture of a perfectly shaped pyramid. There are a lot of pictures of some of the columns. And then, we've actually done what you're hoping that we would do. You just need to get in and get into JPL website and get into the Hubble telescope. Research that, and you get into looking at some of the modern pictures, or the recent pictures, I should say, of the moon from the Hubble, and they are just phenomenal.
Well, I would imagine that, you know, one reason they don't focus it on the moon, or at least that we know of, is they don't want us to see what they see.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. But now they've got the amateur astronomers around the world can use some of the larger observatories and use time. That's where they're discovering all of these, transient lunar anomalies, where they get these flashes from different places on the moon. In addition, looking at the sun, the SOHO cameras that are trained on the sun, picking up these asteroids that are plunging in and then more recently, things that actually look like they are some type of metallic craft of huge size orbiting the sun or in location. So there's so much stuff being released to the public now that I think the disclaimer group, or those that are trying to keep us from knowing, can't keep up with it all.
Back to the point that Dave made about the Vatican observatories. Why would the Vatican have an observatory?
Well, and then they've got one of the largest ones here in New Mexico. And my put on that is that they have the records that shows when Nibiru, or whatever you want to call it, the destroyer, because it's in our ancient writings, that if it comes into our solar system, comes close, then it could create a catastrophic event. They're tracking and keeping track of that event so that they know when and where to go or what to do about it.
Hey, Ken Johnson, I'm sorry to cut you off there. I really enjoyed the conversation. Wish you the best. Hope if you have any problems and anybody hassles you, you'll let us know.
I certainly will.
All right. Thanks, Ken. Appreciate it. I'll be back tomorrow night filling in for my friend and colleague George Norrie. David Hatcher Childress and Ruben Uriarte are my guests. Merry Christmas to everyone. Thanks to Nathan and Gina and Lex for working on the holiday. Good night, everyone.